were talking with each other about everything that had happened as they talked and discussed these things with each other. Jesus himself came up and walked along with them, but they were kept from recognizing him. He asked them, "What are you discussing together as you walk along?" They stood still, their faces downcast. One of them, named Cleopas, asked him, "Are you only a visitor to Jerusalem, that you do not know these things that have happened in these last days?" "What things?" he asked. "About Jesus of Nazareth," they replied. "He was a prophet, powerful in word and deed, before God and all the people. The chief priests and the rulers handed him over to be sentenced to death, and they crucified him. But we had hoped that he was the one who was going to redeem Israel. And what is more, this is the third day since all this took place. In addition, some of our women amazed us. They went to the tomb early this morning but didn't find his body. They came and told us that there'd been a vision of angels who said he was alive. Then some of our companions went to the tomb and found it was just as the women had said, but they did not see. He said to them, 'How foolish you are, and how slow of heart to be, and how slow of heart, sorry, how foolish you are, and how slow of heart to believe all the prophets have spoken. Did not the Christ have to suffer these things and then enter his glory?' And beginning with Moses and all the prophets, he explained to them what was said in all the scriptures concerning himself. As they approached the village to which they were going, Jesus acted as if he were going further. But they urged him strongly, 'Stay with us, for it's nearly evening and the day's almost over.' So he went to stay with them. When he was at the table with them, he took bread, gave thanks, broke it, and began to give it to them. Then their eyes were opened and they recognized him, and then he disappeared from their sight. They asked each other, 'Were not our hearts burning within us while he talked with us on the road and opened the scriptures to us?' They got up and returned at once to Jerusalem. There they found the 11 and those with them assembled together and saying, 'It is true, the Lord has risen and has appeared to Simon.' Then the two told what had happened on the way and how Jesus was recognized by them when he broke the bread."
Right. I'm good to go now, am I? Right, okay. So here's a question for you to think about before we dive into this. What good is a church that doesn't care? And when I sort of ask that question, I mean, you know, just think, follow it through a little bit. If there's a church that doesn't care, then what does that say about the head of the church, who is Jesus? Or if there's a church that doesn't care, what does that say about the members of the church who, as we were reminded earlier, this is how people will know that you're my disciples, Jesus said, if you love each other. So what good is a church that doesn't care? And we want to make sure, as leaders of Eden Church, that Eden is a church that cares. I'm not saying that we don't care at the moment, but we want to embed a culture of care in Eden, to make sure that nobody falls through the cracks, that everyone is always knows that they matter. I've heard it said, I don't know if this is true, but it certainly has a ring of truth, that it takes only 4 weeks for somebody to go from asking the question, "Does this church care about me?" into answering the question, I know this church doesn't care about me. And we want to make sure that in Eden, that nobody has that kind of four-week experience. And so that's why we're going through the series, which has got this word that you've probably never heard of before until Jay introduced it a few weeks ago, paraklesis, coming alongside. And so we've got a six-week series going through, trying to bring to ourselves the ways in which we can behave to make sure that we never get anyone who goes on that four-week journey from asking, does this church care about me, into thinking, I know this church doesn't care about me. And so we're on our third week of it. We've had Simon talk to us about caring a few weeks back. We had John James talking to us about loving last week. And today we want to think about what does it mean to journey alongside others. Now, the idea of the Christian life as a journey is one that kind of goes back quite a long way. There's a book that's been in print since 1678 and hasn't been out of print at any time since then. So that's got to be one of the longest running books. It's called Pilgrim's Progress, and you may or may not have read it. And the principle of the book of Pilgrim's Progress is that there's this character, Christian, who starts off his journey at the Wicket Gate, and he's trying to find his way to the Celestial City, and he goes through all sorts of places on the way, the Slough of Despond and the Vanity Fair and Doubting Castle. And this idea that the Christian life is a journey was not invented by John Bunyan when he wrote Pilgrim's Progress in 1678. The gospel accounts show that Jesus was continually on a journey. He was on a physical journey. He was an itinerant preacher who had no permanent home for most of his ministry. So he went around the length and breadth of the land of Israel, Jerusalem to Galilee and Jericho to Capernaum. And he met people on the way, just like in Pilgrim's Progress, sort of met all sorts of people, some good and some bad. Then Jesus met people like Nicodemus and Zacchaeus and the woman at the well, and he journeyed with them. And we can learn from what happened, how Jesus did that, and the impact he had on their lives, to look at how we can have an impact on our lives, and on each other's lives in the church. But before we look at a particular journey that Jesus went on, then there are some things about journeying that we just kind of need to note. First is that there can be a challenge with our journey, right? So the journey of our life is not always straightforward and fantastic. Job said, Job, if you know the story of Job, he knew all about trouble. And he said this, man is born to trouble as surely as sparks fly upward. I think that's a fantastic illustration, isn't it? But on the other hand, Hosea says something which is like takes that idea on a little bit and says, I'll make the valley of trouble a door of hope. Well, that's interesting, isn't it? Out of trouble can come hope, Hosea says. And God can use us to be that door of hope to other people. And in joining each other's journey in this church, then we can bring hope to each other, as we realize that we're not alone and there's somebody else alongside us, and that someone is willing to journey with us. And that's why David wrote in Psalm 23, and I'll quote from the Authorized Version, because that's the version we all know, even though we all use modern translations of the Bible now. And he said this, yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for thou art with me. Right? The journey is bearable because we've got somebody with us. Life was easier because he wasn't alone. So a challenging journey is made easier with somebody alongside us. And so this is the challenge for us. We want to be a church, Eden Church. We want to be the kind of place that gives support to each other when our journeys are challenging. So that's the first thing. Journeys can be challenging. But then the next idea is the gift of the journey, right? A journey can be a gift. So this is the way the Message translates the verse, which is central to the theme of this paraklesis, coming alongside sort of program. It says this, God comes alongside us. That's the paraklesis word. God comes alongside us when we go through hard times. And before you know it, he brings us alongside someone else who's going through hard times, so that we can be there for that person just as God was there for us. That's fantastic, isn't it? It's put so clearly. And, you know, the challenge of your journey, the challenges that you've had, very likely have significance for someone else in the church next week, next year, and the year after. And your challenges put you in a unique position to help and empathize with other people. So whatever they are, whether that's, you know, your challenges, maybe their bereavement or redundancy or illness or family difficulties, whatever it is, then the things that you've experienced in your Christian life and the way that your life outside the church, if you like, impacted on your Christian life, is something that you've understood through your journey, and that's actually a gift to share with other people. And, you know, I don't know, how many people have we got in Eden Church? We're normally, there's a lot away this Sunday, but we're typically, you know, maybe 70 or 80 people on a Sunday morning. How long have we, as the average person, been a Christian? 20, 30 years, perhaps? We might have 2,000, 2,500 years worth of Christian journey experience between us. And this is a gift that we can use to help each other. And we want to be a church where that huge gift of journeying experience is released, consciously released, to support each other. But then there's another thing then about journey. We've got the challenge of the journey and the gift of the journey. There's also the process of the journey. And in that passage in 2 Corinthians that I read the message about God coming alongside us, that we can go alongside others, it talks about hard times. And the hard times means pressure, squeezing. And it's actually, interestingly enough, the same word that Jesus uses at one point about childbirth, right? Because, the process of delivering a baby with him, the child is like, if you like, squeezed out of the body. And the idea there is this, that sometimes out of a struggle, out of pressure, can come new life. And from hard times can come life and purpose and vitality and healing for others. And that's why Paul says to the Thessalonian church, encourage the disheartened, help the weak, be patient with everyone, and make sure that no one pays back wrong for wrong, but always strive to do what's good for each other and for everyone else. So a few things about our Christian journey from the Bible. But another word, this word paraklesis, which is normally translated in the New Testament as coming alongside, it's sometimes translated as consolation. And consolation is bringing calm and peace and easing and soothing hurt, finding rest and giving hope. Our consolation abounds through Christ, the Apostle Paul wrote. And Jesus is Emmanuel. He's God with us, right? Emmanuel is God with us. And God comes alongside us and gives us consolation. And the opposite of consolation, to help you understand that, is disconsolation, which is loss and grief and sorrow and disappointment and failure and hopelessness. And we want to be a church that brings consolation when we experience disconsolation, as we all do from time to time. To the sad, the bereaved, the heartbroken, the distressed, the dejected, the disconsolate, the disillusioned, and the downcast. We want to be a church that helps each other when we're like that. And that's where this story of the Emmaus journey comes in, that we saw a video of and that Y read to us. And in this story, then, it happens just after the crucifixion. And there are a couple of disconsolate disciples walking along the road. And Jesus joins their conversation. And he journeys with them. And we're going to look at how Jesus journeys with them to see how we can journey with each other, Jesus style. So, the first thing, I think it's significant. This is the day that Jesus rose from the dead, right? So, what does Jesus do? Does he kind of, you know, flounce around Jerusalem, saying, look how amazing I am, I've just risen from the dead? He doesn't, actually. He goes off onto a lonely road and walks alongside a couple of his disciples who he knows are disconsolate. And what does that tell you about how important it is to care for each other rather than bigging himself up after the most remarkable feat in human history, then Jesus instead spends time walking alongside some people who need this time. And that should tell us how important it is for us as a church to be walking alongside each other. And the way he does it is very revealing. The first thing that he does is he connects with their story. It says at the beginning that they were talking to each other about everything that had happened. They were talking about the crucifixion, about the claims that the women had made about having seen Jesus, about the missing body. They were telling this story to each other and trying to go over it. And that's the way that we do, that's the way that we do when things in our lives, that we deal with difficult situations, isn't it? It's always to try and look and just talk, and we keep talking and going over and over and over in our minds. And that's what these disciples are doing. And Jesus just joins them and listens in. It just says that he came up. And it's interesting how he approaches them and joins them. He slips into their journey. He doesn't kind of, you know, again, using that flounce word, he doesn't flounce into the conversation and just immediately say, hey, it's okay, I can sort it all out. He slips in with where they were. He was in for the long haul. This was a 7-mile walk. He hadn't gone to find some disciples who had 10 minutes and that was it. And he was going to, you know, bish, bash, bosh, sort it out. In, out, job done. He was prepared to take hours over this and journey with them the whole way between Jerusalem and Emmaus. And he gently catches up with them. You can sort of feel, you know, when he comes up and he sort of asks them, what were you talking about? It's clear he's just been walking up slowly behind them, eavesdropping a little in the conversation, rather than taking over. And a self-centered person would have barged in and hijacked and dominated the conversation, and sabotaged and controlled it. But journeying alongside people when they're hurting starts by just showing up and being there. And that's what Jesus teaches us. And not wanting to talk about ourselves and not wanting to take over. But, you know, our presence alone is half of the care that God wants us to bring to each other when we're down. But then he builds rapport. And Jesus, he patiently walks beside them. And building that rapport and listening rather than talking is the first part of journeying along with somebody when they have trouble. And just being there with people. And then finally, Jesus enters the conversation and he uses the door opener. He doesn't immediately try and give the answer and say, right, I've heard everything you've talked about. Let me tell you how it is. Right? He doesn't do that. Again, he uses a door opener to let them talk a little bit more. He starts with this open-ended question. He says to them, what kind of conversation is this that you've been having with one another as you walk and are sad? I mean, do you think Jesus knew the answer to that question? Of course he did. He knew exactly what they were talking about. And he also knew the conclusion that he needed to come to, which was that the crucifixion wasn't the end, and that he was alive. But he also knew that the right way of doing it was to let them get there themselves. He knew exactly what had happened, but he wanted to give them the opportunity to talk it out. And he expresses empathy as he does it as well. He says, as you walk and are sad, he's noticed that they're sad. He just doesn't come in with his own, you know, happy, cheerful, I'm risen from the dead, I'm feeling good. He appreciates their sadness. He reads their body language. He looks at their faces. He looks at the way that they're walking. He can see their shoulders are slumped. And he reads the signals that they're sending out. And he pays attention to what they're like. And that's how we need to be when we journey alongside people. He identifies what they're feeling and he reflects it back to them. And so if we're going to follow the Jesus pattern, when we journey with people when times are hard, then we're not there to be intrusive, but to allow others time to express their pain and to let them talk about it. So Jesus lets them tell their story. He keeps on asking questions. What things, he asked. And about Jesus of Nazareth, they reply. So he keeps on just letting them talk. And Jesus is sort of like using this to to just let them realise that they want Jesus to be part of the conversation. He's not pushing in. He's being invited into the conversation. And he doesn't cut them short, but he keeps on listening. And although he had the answer, although he was the answer, he wanted them to discover it. And so he walked with them and he listened to them. And then eventually he comes in with a bigger story. He's heard and he's earned the right to now talk. And the book uses that we've got used a word that I've got to say I've never heard of before, but it helps you to understand the idea quite well. It's called care fronting. Starting off with care. Care at the front rather than at the back. And so Jesus was showing care and concern for the individuals and not just challenging the issue. He doesn't just go straight in by saying, well, what's the problem, right? You know, what is... He first of all cares for them and then he earns the right to speak. And then, having earned that right to speak and earned their respect, then he's in a position to help them to face reality. And then he can get them to focus on perspective and hope. Because they've got two problems, right? Perspective. Perspective is their head, right? You know, they'd kind of forgotten what Jesus had told them, that he would have to be crucified and rise from the dead. They'd forgotten what the Old Testament prophecies had said. They'd lost perspective. Their heads had gone wrong. Their rational reasoning had gone wrong. But also, their heart had gone wrong. And probably the heart they were despairing was the start of the problem. Because they were despairing, then they weren't able to see the sense of what Jesus had told his disciples must happen. And Jesus deals with both. And by getting alongside them and showing care first, then they're going to listen to him. And he brings grace and truth. He's been gracious, and now it's time for some truth. And he says, and it says, that beginning with Moses and the prophets, he explained to them what was said in the scriptures concerning himself. He said, didn't you know, right? You know, like we saw in that video. But Isaiah said this had to happen. Right? It's there. The Psalms said it had to happen. Jesus told you it had to happen. And he can bring in that truth because he's shown grace first. And the order is important. The truth follows the grace because truth without grace is harsh. But he doesn't just bring them words. He ministers to their needs. Right? So, you know, they reach Emmaus and Jesus goes to carry on. And they say, no, 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 come with us. Right? And he says, no, it's okay. No, come with us, they say. And they're insistent. They urged him strongly. They needed more of Jesus, right? He'd brought them grace, he'd brought them truth, but their journey wasn't over yet. And Jesus needed to be with them longer. And it would have been very easy for Jesus to walk away thinking, well, I've done it now, I've shown them some grace, I've given them some truth, time to move on, find some more disciples to bring some grace and truth to. But they weren't finished, they still had needs. And so he went to their house and he broke bread with them. 7 miles with Jesus wasn't quite enough. They needed 7 miles and a couple of hours. And he's willing to go the whole way. And then he brings enlightenment. As he breaks bread with them, they suddenly realize who he is. Sense is made of the whole situation. And Jesus disappears. He's gone. And they've had this visitation of divine light and divine heart. But they didn't just see something. They felt something. And hope was restored. And the disconsolation faded. And Jesus, in what he'd done, with his grace and his truth and his presence, he re-energizes them. Because listen to what it says next. They got up and they returned at once to Jerusalem. There they found the 11 and those with them assembled together and saying, it's true! The Lord's risen! And he's appeared to Simon. And the two what had happened along the way. Enlightenment's dawn, right? So they're now, right, they've just walked 7 miles. They've had the most amazing experience. The temptation, surely, would have been to pour out another glass of wine and sit down and talk to each other about it. But they realised that back in Jerusalem, at the other end of the road, 7 miles away, another few hours walk away, there are other people, and they're not sitting down having a comfortable chat about how amazing it was to have met the risen Lord. They're sitting disconsolate in Jerusalem. So what do? They use their experience to immediately, not even finish their food, to just jump up and walk the 7 miles back to Jerusalem so they can go and cheer somebody else up and journey with them. Which is exactly what Paul says in our overarching verse for the series will happen to us. God journeys with us and consoles us and comes alongside us so that we can journey with others and come alongside them and encourage them. So it went full circle. They'd gone from being the consoled to being the consolers. And that's the way that journeying with each other should work in our church. We should be looking out for each other, seeing the signs of unhappiness, of difficulty, of challenge, walking alongside each other when that happens, showing grace and truth, bringing a new perspective and hope. And at the end of it, leaving the person who we've walked alongside ready to use their experience, the challenges of their life, to be a gift to someone else who they meet. That's how we want to live as a community, so that we can bring glory to our Lord in the way that we live. Thanks.